The paragraph beginning, Ve'olem mikol ze ledato lefi adome, according to the Rambam, ki behiter hachocham hamumches haneder b'mitzvos haTorah u'shlosh shehadyoto. So there are two ways that we can be matir a neder. One is with three regular individuals who comprise a bezdin, even if they're not experts per se in the laws of nedarim and shvos. Or if there's one person who's an extreme expert and knows everything about the laws of the Dharma and Shavuos, you don't even need a bezdin, and he himself can be mater another. V'yasu enyan k'chol asher tetzaveh haTorah olav k'hogen v'chayosher. You do according to, yeah.
I don't understand. Why is it that, you know, if it's necessary to be an expert, you know, in the Hilchos Nedarim, then why do you, how come three amaratzim to be... How is it that three amaratzim add up to one?
That's a good
question. They don't add up. But even the three amaratzim, as you'll see, the Sefer Chanukah says, I think at the very end, they have to be at least people who are knowledgeable enough to be receptive, that if you explain to them how to be matir and eder, then they will they will understand. They can't be total amaratzim.
Well, so in other words, right now we have people who are able to read the thing in the sitter, you know, like understand what about it.
You should make sure that the three people who are matir your neder on Erev Rosh Hashanah or any situation are at least of the level that they understand if Eric's explained to them how to be matir your neder. But reading reading the thing in the sitter is nothing.
Oh, okay. Most cases, Erev Rosh Hashanah, people's,
That's not right. I was talking in the shiur last night, actually, about how people might mistakenly think, no, it's in the siddur, this is some sort of prayer. And then if you just, break your teeth reading the Hebrew of the Hatar Siddurim formula, so that's nothing. You have to understand it. Normally, you're Yotze if you daven in Hebrew and you don't understand Hebrew, but this is not a prayer. This is something that's a legal formulation, and you have to understand it, like Bitul Chometz, something like that. Then they have fulfilled a positive commandment. If they at least attempt to release someone from a neder in a manner that's not in consonance with the Torah, could go in shnei hadyotos. So yochid she'inu mumche. Let's say there are two regular individuals, or one person attempts to be matir neder, even though he's insufficiently qualified. Afal pi she'teirim eino heter. This does not actually serve to release the vow of the petitioner. Yesh aleihem onesh bitul aseizeh. Nevertheless, they've neglected to perform this positive commandment, which is only to nullify nedarim in a manner that's in consonance with the Torah. Uchenin shekasati lamala b'inya mitzvah sanachalos. That's like regarding inheritance. That if you say, if you have sons and daughters, and you say, I declare that only my daughters should inherit and not my sons, so then that is a violation of the mitzvah of doing the inheritance in accordance with the Torah's will. But if you, but it's ineffective, in other words, so that you didn't do anything, so you could say maybe you don't violate. No, the engaging a mechanism to try to do this is enough to violate the positive commandment that goes against the doing of the mitzvah in accordance with how the Torah says. She'a mitzav al yirosheini b'niyach b'yishet dvarim b'teilem, yeshalav onesh b'tel ha-mitzvah d'avar ha-harman ad-malka. Nevertheless, you showed your rebellion against what the king has to say. She'tziva osanu b'din ha-yerusha. That he commanded us regarding certain methods of inheritance, so too he commanded us regarding certain methods of releasing Nedarim, and if you try to go against that, then you violated the positive commandment. V'ulam ha-Ramban Zal, so you can understand this formulation of the Rambam, that that you have to do it in the way that the Torah says, but even if it doesn't work, you violate the positive commandment, is also is a little bit difficult, also because the mitzvah, remember, what's the title of this mitzvah? It's Hafaras Nedarim, which it says explicitly in the Torah that the husband or the father, under certain circumstances, can nullify the vows of his daughter or wife. So the institution of Hafaras Nedarim per se is not found in the Torah. We said it's basically just a received tradition, even though there may be allusions to it in the text of the Chumash itself. So that's why the Ramban has a different approach to this mitzvah. Olam HaRamban Zal, Kosav She'ein Limnos Din Ze Klal Mecheshben HaMitzvah. So this halacha is not one of the mitzvahs at all, not one of the 613 mitzvahs. Zeh Lashono, this is what the Ramban says. V'chein yiron shafaras nedarim lo timana lefi shehi shalilus. This is a negativity. It's not a not a positive commandment. It's just the Bible also calls yotzmi pinu v'shalonachel dvareinu rakal pi ha'avu aval adkan. Really, what this means is that you have to keep your nedarim unless they're nullified. There's no specific Torah inyan to nullify nedarim at all. This is just one of the details of the laws of nedarim and shavuos. It's not a it's not its own independent thing. V'divrei pi chacham chein. So as we know, that the Sefer HaChinuch generally prefers the approach of the Ramban regarding the counting of the mitzvahs, but he says that he always follows, nevertheless, the order of the Ramban because it's more more convenient. And indeed, the Sefer HaChinuch was more closely connected to the school of the Ramban than he was to the school of the Rambam. In other words, Ramban is already, when Spain turned back over to Christianity, so they the methods of learning in Spain became very different. They were much more influenced instead of by the approach of the in North Africa Muslim areas. Rather, they became much more influenced by their fellow Christian societies. Jews were living in Christian societies, which in terms of France, in terms of the school of the Tosis. Yeah.
Well, the Reconquista at the time. Wait, what year exactly was the
what year? The Sefer HaChinuch was 14th century.
14th century, okay. Yeah, so it's before after the Conquista.
No, it's after it.
I mean, 1492 is when it finished.
1492 is the 15th century.
Yeah, I mean, 1492 is no, when, there was, the last of the, when they had expulsion.
The last of the holdouts in the South.
So I was under the impression that the real change in influence came around with the Rosh, bringing, you know, some of the Ashkenazic.
No, it was before the Rosh, because the Rosh was contemporary with the Rashba, and the influence of the French Baalei Tosfos started already with the Ramban earlier, and the Ramban who learned in Provence, which was a border area between France and Spain, so that's where the influence came that way. So again, there might have been Muslim holdouts at this time in the south of Spain. But the places the Sefer HaChinuch lived in Barcelona, So Barcelona is northern Spain, so that's was reconquered first. Mishor she'inyan haneder v'ashua v'heter shalhem kvar herchavti b'maymar b'hen kasher yisige yadi b'seder v'yishma yisro be'azharas lo sisa hey simin lama gimel. This is in the Ten Commandments. We talk about lo sisa shem Hashem Elokecha lashav, not bearing the name of the Lord our God in vain. So the importance of the Nedarim and Shavuos is because when we make commitments, especially when they're associated with God, then we have to keep them. And occasionally it might be necessary to release ourselves of them, but it has to be a very specific process to be followed. Otherwise, we risk showing disrespect to the institution of a commitment in the form of a Nedar Shavuos.
What role does shem Hashem play? You have to say.
No, it's a higher level of Shavuah, but nevertheless, the Nedar Shavuah is associated with a religious commitment. Mm-hmm. Mm. So there is a Shavuah, as the Sefer HaChinuch will say later, that if you take a Shavuah with the name of God, so then there's a discussion in the Gemara, and even though we pass on even such a Shavuah can be released, nevertheless, the minag was in many communities that if someone made a Shavuah explicitly with Shem Hashem, you do not give him a Taras Nedarim at all. Because of the severity of that. Look, technically, if you don't formulate something in the Lashon of a Nedar Shavuah, so it's not. But nevertheless, general practice is to be more careful. That's why when anybody makes any sort of commitment, so then you say, people say Bli Nedar, which is, again, not really necessary in terms of the strict halacha in most situations. But nevertheless, it's considered to be a nice thing to do, especially because there is a situation where you really do need to say Bli Nedar, which is when you accept upon yourself a good custom or chumrah. Mm-hmm. So if you know something is halachically permissible according to the strict letter of the law, but nevertheless you want to hold yourself to a higher standard and you begin to do it, and you do it even once, certainly three times, but even once, with the intention to continue, that could have the status
with
of
the
another.
Intention to continue.
Right, right. So that has the status of another. So, like, something as pious practice, like what?
Gebrucht, something like that. So, you know.
Gebrucht. You want to accept upon yourself Gebrucht. So, one Pesach, you keep Gebrucht, and you say, you intend to continue. So, yeah, you have to keep it forever unless you have a Taras Adarim. But, or if you have, say, like, you know, one time you want to try out the Tikkun Chatzos, getting up to mourn the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in the middle of the night. So you get up and you like it and you intend to continue. And then that could be a neder. So it's better if you're, if you want to try Tikkun Chatzos just as a tryout, you say, before you even start saying, you say, I'm doing the Tikkun Chatzos bli neder. That, you know, and every time you accept anything upon yourself, you want to start keeping Chalv Yisrael.
Pas Yisrael
is not a personal thing. That's a generally accepted minhag. But if you want to start, so it's a good idea to say that you you try to do it bli neder. But that's only if something that you know is mutter, according to the strict letter of halacha, you think is mutter, according to the strict letter of halacha, and you want to accept a more stringent approach. But if you thought something is usser, and then all of a sudden your rabbi tells you, no, that's not really usser, that's really mutter. So the chatchila, it's nice to have a taras adar, but technically speaking, the mefarshim in the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Adarim, right? I think it's the Behuda, writes that if you thought it was usser and then it's really mutter and you didn't have intention that this, you would accept this as a pious practice, but you're just doing it because you thought it was usser, but it's really not, then you would be allowed to change your practice even without Hataras Nedarim.
Suppose you say, instead of saying, I'm taking on myself to do whatever, you say, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try to confess those tonight.
If you explicitly say this is a trial basis, then that should be the equivalent of blineder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it never have any role in, say, in some kind of a commercial issue? So, for example, say, like, you know, I promise I'm going to buy this from you. Or, I swear I'm going to buy this from you, or something like that.
Swear, then you're talking about a lashon of a shvuah already.
Okay,
promise.
Right, promise, okay. Or say, but it's not, you know,
if they say the word promise, mm-hmm. Again, it's not a good idea, but I don't think saying the promise per se is a... if it's accepted, again, that would fall under the normal rules of sales. So if the word promise is a magical word in business, that it's a real commitment. Yeah. But if promise just means that, you know, I really at this time intend to, but I need to think about it a little bit more, and I might still back out. So again, with the terms of these business deals, so a lot depends on what's the accepted process, you know, like we were talking about before, you know, the diamond deal. So you're allowed to back out until you shake hands and say mazel bracha. So it doesn't say anywhere in the Gemara that if you're trading diamonds and you shake and say mazel bracha, so that constitutes an intractable deal.
But commonly accepted.
Right. So there is a halachically recognized thing of the of what's accepted in business. That's why one of the kinyanim, when we make mechiras chametz, is shaking hands. That the rabbi who's the messenger of all the people. So in addition to the document and the money and the kinyan chalipin, where you take up, you know, pick up a pen and all these halachic things. So one of the methods that you use to sell the chametz is shaking hands. You say the rabbi and the non-Jew shake hands, say the deal is done, and that's one of the ways to do it. Midine haMitzvah. What are the halachas? Mashamer zikron lebracha. Kol kinuye nedarim ki nedarim. That anything that's normally accepted in that place as a nickname, so to speak, for a neder, is considered like a nether. Charamim ka charamim, same like a cherim, which is also, it's declaring something impermissible upon yourself. Shuos ke shuos, naziros ke naziros. So if you take a nazir vow, so also that would count as a, if it doesn't say, you don't say exactly the word nazir, but it's something that's recognized in that place as referring to a nazir. Kona omer, konam, konach, konas. That one of the ways that you can take a nether is you say, such and such a thing is to me as a korban. So korban is asar bahana. You're not, it's only for God. So you're saying that such and such a thing is like a korban, so it means that you're taking another not to derive any benefit from that object. So even if you don't say the word korban, but you say like a nickname of the word korban that's accepted, konam konach konas, hare elu kinuyim la korban. So even you don't say the word cherem clearly, but you say these other things, so then that's the that counts as a cherem.
I don't get what these others. Where are these words coming from?
They're just colloquialisms.
They're colloquial.
That means in certain places, that's how they referred to it, as like a... It's almost like saying...
A slang expression. Almost.
It's like a slang expression, like saying, you know, a lot of, there are a lot of contractions, like in English all the time, instead of, I'm going to do this, I'm gonna do this. So gonna is a slack...
Korban come to Konach?
Konach?
It seems very weird.
Yeah, it's a little bit farther
Far-fetched.
Moved.
Like Rofersh's Peirush, you know, sometimes. So saying, oh, yeah, well, one of the letters is sort of looked like that, so, yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
Kind of, sort of.
So, Chirem. Okay, I hear, but in certain places, never this somehow developed as a slang expression for a Chirem. Again, but nowadays... In the U.S., so if somebody used this turn of phrase, so most people, unless they learn Maseches Nedarim, wouldn't know what on earth this means. So then, this would not be an issue. So Nozik, Naziach, Pziach, Harei Elu Kinuyim LeNazirus. So these sound a little bit like Nazir. So if you say Hareini Naziach, so that would make you a Nazir.
I mean, I'm sorry, it also sounds like, you know, you shouldn't say wow because it sounds like vow. You know, I mean, the thing that is happening for, do you think?
No, because it has to be what's makubal in that place, in Achinami. If in America, wow was a potential way of referring to a vow, then yes, you wouldn't be allowed to say.
Okay.
Say, if you say if that were the situation, so in Achinami, if you said, wow, I won't eat that hamburger. Mm-hmm. So that could be, yeah. Shavusa, Shikuka, Nadar, Bimuha. So, muha is like a vow. I mean, a shavua. So all these things, hareilu kinuyin l'shavua. So these are a slang term for a shavua. Vinyan l'shonus elu sha'amru chachomim she'nidonin ki'ilu hotzi adam bisfasav haloshon kitikno. This is as if the person said the actual words of the vow. Below nachosh l'mashanu matzrichem pivalivo shavin. Say, hey, wait a minute. We know that in order for a neder or a shvuah to be valid, so one's intention needs to be the same as what one brings forth from one's mouth.
Sure.
Yeah.
A korban, bezmana zeh, you can't designate something as a korban.
Sure can.
You can?
Okay. Yeah. It's just not a good idea because there's nothing to do with it.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
What would be the point?
There wouldn't be, but...
You have to go ahead and like.
Yeah. Varei lohotzi adover kitikno mi piv. You say, if you need piv alibo shavim, so this was not a good expression of peh. This wasn't a good expression of expressing it verbally. Hatam, mipnei sheyesh bilashonos elu mashmozin yishakol hashomea yigzor alav shazos kavanas hanishpa o hanoder. So since everybody knows this is what you mean, then it counts. Even va'achar shekein harehu ki'ilu amar adavar mevor ketikno. It's as if you said it correctly. Shim lo tomar kei nimtza she'ein be'ilgim neder u'shvu al olam. This means people who cannot speak properly, people who have speech impediments, will never be able to take a neder u'shvua because they can't say the word exactly correctly. So it's not an idea of saying the word exactly correctly. It just has to be communicated verbally and understood in the heart in order to be a proper neder shua. V'ze'eino b'emes. How could that be that somebody who has a speech impediment could never make a neder shua, but rather it must be that anything that's verbally recognized as being a neder shua counts, but not kinuyim, what the Gemara talks about, that if it's too far removed, then it's no good. So if it's if you replace another word, so like if you say Niziach, so that at least has two letters the same, like Rafersh. But if you say something like, I don't know, Miziach or something like that, that's, you know, even it's two steps removed from the original word, so then that's not, that doesn't count. Yeah.
I mean, does sign language count as speech?
No.
No?
No, so if you really can't talk, not just to have a speech impediment, but if you're really mute, then yeah, you cannot take another.
How about writing it?
Nope. Has to be verbally expressed. You have problems sometimes with writing, so yes, the question is, what about a get also? So a get has to be verbally authorized. So what happens if you have a husband who cannot speak? So what does writing count? So that's a big discussion in Hilchos Gittin.
Do they come up with a solution?
Yeah, there are solutions, usually. I mean, usually it would involve some sort of either writing plus a other nonverbal cues like shaking your head or something like that. But you, when you combine the two of those, so then it's better. But obviously, speech is the best if you can have it. Even though it's not always possible. There are four types of nedarim that don't even need a hatara. They are intrinsically released because they're invalid. You don't have to ask a bezdin or a yachid mumche at all. This is in the Gemara, but this is how we pass. So a neder that was clearly taken merely in order to try to force your hand. Meaning, so like you're having you're an auction. There's a bidding war with someone, and you say, ah, if I pay more than then I vow that you can't have any benefit. So if you go like that, so then that would be not valid because it's clear that you don't really mean it seriously, but rather you're only intending it in order to force your hand in the bidding war. You're just trying to be mizaris everyone to come to a conclusion of the transaction. Nidre havai. That means a nether that's taken with a ridiculous premise. For example, the example that's given in the Mishnah is that you take a nether and you say that this nether will be valid only if I see a crowd as large as the Exodus from Egypt. So something that's totally totally ridiculous, then it also doesn't need a hatara. Nidre shigagos, the nedarim that are taken under false pretenses. So for example, you see from afar that there are people who are picking your fruits off trees in your orchard. And you say, you scream at them in order to make them desist. I asser all the fruits of my orchard on you as a neder, which you can do. You can asser a neder. Remember, the difference between a neder and a shvua is that a neder goes on an object and a shvua goes on the person. So when you're talking about a neder, so you can asser someone else's object on yourself, or you can asser your object on someone else. Well, you can't do this, obviously. You can't asser someone else's object on someone else. You have no power over that. Can't say, I asked you to say for achinuch on, Rabbi Taubes or whatever. So that you can't do because I own neither the sefer achinuch nor Rabbi Taubes. So therefore, I can't do that. But let's say, so you have this this orchard, and you're taking you take a nether that you asser all the fruit, which again you own, on these people who are eating the fruit, and then you come closer, you approach your orchard, and you realize it's your parents who are eating the fruit. You thought it was some stranger who was just helping himself. Whoops. But you realize it's your parents. So since that was clearly an error, obviously, because no one would... Well, most people would not mind their own parents eating the fruits off the trees in their orchard, so that would not require a hatar at all.
What's the significance of saying I usher my property to somebody else? I mean, it's your property. It's already ushered. They can't just take it without your permission. So what's the nether involved here? I don't quite understand.
It becomes an additional level of prohibition that some people are, for example, gezel, they don't mind. Mm-hmm. Stealing doesn't bother them so much, but if they're violating a nether, so then they're more nervous about that. Nidre onsin. So also, if something happens that is totally unpredicted, and you say, you know, I want this nether to be valid, when you come across the bridge, I don't know, something like that, and then all of a sudden this person drops dead out of the boat, so he's never going to come across the bridge. So that requires no hatara because this is such a crazy situation that that this person is totally prevented from ever coming across the bridge, and the nether would be invalid from the outside. What's it talking about in each of these situations? We are seeing in Yerushalmi, Gabi Nidre Zeruzin. So remember the ones that are talking about making to force your hand in a transaction. Amar Bzeira, Hada de Tamar Bishain Ma'amidin. That's only if you agree that you are only doing it in order to make the transaction work in your favor. But if you say, no, I really did have it in mind to be a nether, so then we don't automatically nullify it, but rather it would be an actual nether. Avalim hayu ma'amidim tzrichin heter chacham. But if the person says, no, I intended it as a nether, so then you would need to seek hatar sedarim in the normal manner. Kolomerim hayu ma'amidim divrayim kolomer shalom nadroso nether lazaris lebedavka nadroso. And they said, no, I really meant it. Tzrichin shel chacham. He says the same would apply to the other three types, that if you agree that you really intended it as a nether no matter what, then it would count. Umihu becholin yinachacham matiran kozman sheyimtza pesach lahater. That the chacham can release the vow if he finds an opening, that's what we call it, an opening to be matered. Kilomar shimtza shuminyan shomar alav noder ilo isi yodea b'shas haneder davarzeh lo isi noder. That if he would find a situation where he would say, and that person says, well, if I had known that at the time that I made the vow, then I wouldn't have made the vow, then that's what we call a pesach, and that would allow the chacham to release one from the nether. Vafilu benolad poschin leheter uvilvad sheyehe hanol. Uvilvad sheyehe hanolad matzui, avalo benolad sheino matzui. So, what is a? There are a lot of rules regarding what's a significant opening to make a hataras nedarim possible. So, let's say one example that's given in the classical poskim is. So let's say you accept upon yourself that you're going to move to a different country within say Eretz Yisrael. Let's be religious. I move to Eretz Yisrael within a particular period of time, and in that time, so your wife becomes pregnant and she can't travel. So that would be a pesach that would allow you to be. Again, it's not something that you knew at the time that was in existence. In other words, if the reason for you wanting to cancel your nether was in existence at the time that you made the nether, then it's more understandable that since you didn't have all the information, potentially, you could make a pesach. But here, it's something that came later. That's what's called nolad. It's something that came after you made the nether. But nevertheless, since that's something that's reasonable to happen, since such things happen all the time, so then that would be a significant Pesach, but it was something that was completely crazy and unexpected. Then if it's nolad, if it happened after the nether was made, then you would not be able to use that as Pesach. Yeah.
There's an example.
Art scroll.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. No game. Okay, why?
The man vows to divorce his wife. It can be annulled if he says, if I realize the divorce will obligate me to pay her kesuba, I would never have done it. Yeah.
Right, so that's something that was in existence.
It is in existence, and normal people realize that, in fact, you have to pay some kind of support, alimony, whatever it is, you know, if you were somebody.
Okay, but if you didn't, so then you could claim, yeah, right, exactly.
And you don't simply say, oh, come on, you really didn't know,
how can you prove you didn't know?
Yeah.
Well, you can't prove it, but, you know.
Right, you have to make the claim in front of the Bezda.
It's hard to prove. Because
right, it's not provable.
No, I mean,
you don't prove.
You assume.
You believed regarding these things. If you had, if...
Well, we want to annul Nedarim anyway. I mean, so, you know, there was a...
But
he's going to try to find some way to keep him from doing it. Yeah,
but ultimately, if a person falsifies the claim for Ataras Nedarim, so then it's his sin, you know.
Yeah.
We find that at least it used to be the case that people took Nedarim Mitzvahs very seriously, perhaps more than other mitzvahs. Now we're like, what? Nedarim Mitzvahs, we never have to deal with that even. But in the old days, people took it, you still should take it very seriously, but people, it was a more common facet of people's lives, and they took it more seriously than we do nowadays.
How is this whole business about, an example of vowing to divorce, this condition, that condition, that doesn't get... Why does this Nedarim stuff have to get all tangled up with just if the guy should give her a get, he should give her a get and just leave that stuff out.
Okay, that no, that's a totally different discussion. But there are situations where you could take a shavua that you're going to divorce your wife. So that's what we were mentioning.
Why do you need a shavua to do that? Why make the
You're so mad at her and you're so... You're so afraid that you're not going to stick with your commitment when you cool off, and you really you say, "Yeah, exactly."
But then you're kind of ambivalent if you're afraid you're not going to stick with it.
So, no, but the whole point
anger
of it
that does all kinds of things to people.
True.
It's very powerful.
Yeah. Very commonly, if they're angry, they will say, "I swear."
Exactly. The whole point is you want to be, you don't want, you really feel strongly about your commitment now.
I will never,
Right. So that's why you would need a Taras Nedarim. But in fact, that gets you into the Shaila that we discussed last time, that if you take a Shavua to give a get, so that is potentially, according to some Shitas, a problem of a get Me'usa. That is something that it's... That it's a forced get, because you force yourself. You're not doing it of your own free will. Again, the simple understanding is that something that you accept upon yourself is not considered a get me'usa, because it comes from inside.
Me, myself, and I.
But nevertheless, again, part of the a standard procedure of a get nowadays includes a hataras nedarim to make sure that this isn't an issue.
Anyway, the main point of all this is how careful we have to be with our speech.
This is true.
Obviously, the
nipple. This is
true. Yeah, do not make nedarim. It's very scary. Sure.
Watch your mouth.
No nedarim, no shavuos. Let's avoid getting into any of these shilas. This is perhaps the most common way of being matar and neder, which is that somebody simply says, I regret having made the nether. If I had known when I made the nether that I would come to regret having made it, so then I wouldn't have made the nether in the first place. And that's considered a valid Pesach, even though, again, it's a discussion in the Gemara, but that's how we pass again. Well, the Bozak Rava, Mishmei, the Rav Nachem, Maseches Nedarim, the Foschin, Bacharota, Beniz Kokin, Lahatir, Afilamisha, Nishba, Belokei Yisrael, Shishua Chamura. Again, we mentioned before, that even if you mention God's name when you take the Shavua, which is the most chomer type of Shavua, the most severe, nevertheless, you could seek a way to release one from such an oath. V'davka b'charota d'meikara. When we say that you can release a person from a vow or oath due to regret, it means that it has to be that something that's so significant that you totally regret ever having made the nether, and there was at no point would the nether have been worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a form of nether which you hold a sefer Torah or something of like that?
A shavua.
Shavua. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Benikitas chefetz. That's when you're in a court. Yeah, there's a shavua benikitas chefetz. You hold the sefer Torah and you take the shavua.
What circumstances? I mean, that's the little existence. What do you have? You know, I mean.
It's not normally practiced. Now, in contemporary Beis Din procedures, we do everything we can to avoid the necessity of taking actual shavuos.
Yeah.
And you find already in times of the Gemara that people were so nervous about taking shavuos, even if they knew they were right. But just in case they're missing something, they were so nervous about taking shavuos, so they used to sometimes, if they were in a court case that could require a shavua, they used to be mevater on their money. They used to not be willing to take less than the full portion that was due to them, which they could have gotten if they took the shvua, but they didn't want to do, because in order to avoid taking the shvua.
And finally, if a Jew gets elected public office and the custom is to swear
on a Bible
or something like that, then
that's
probably not a good idea.
I don't think so.
No, because
that's clearly a separate phrase. It's not talking about you're taking a shvua b'elokei Yisrael, but rather, God help me to fulfill the commitment that I just made. Yeah, good. Kagon lev ze olecha, meaning you were in a completely different frame of mind when you made the neder or shvua, as opposed to how you are now. Kilomar shemitocha kas nadar also another vachash nizgash v'daito toeh benidro legamre. You're completely rejected. You're not interested at all. Veinu rotsa boklal. Aval in nischarit achshav mach masidin shenischadesh l'achar shenadar. But if for the first you know, 2 years that you were living with this nether, you were perfectly happy with it, and you realize, and you admit right now that you were perfectly happy with it, but rather some circumstance changed that you'd rather not observe it now. That is not a charata. A charata means all things being equal, you would declare that it was absolutely never worth it to you to have committed to this nether shvuah. The chafetz u benizrad achshav, but if you wanted it until now, now you change your mind. You need to find a different pesach. Zo einu charata ma'al yisav, ein poskim oklal. So you call him al yishoyel al yisrov, adayim ischaretu achshav. Obviously, if you're coming to ask to get the nether shvuah released, so obviously you'd rather not be subject right now to the nether shvuah. The whole point is that charata has to be that you never wanted it. I mean, you might have thought he wanted it for a while, but now you realize that you would rather never have had it. Umatzinu. Oh, v'imkein lo yinutzrichem v'gemar alachzol. So Pesach heter benedo. Then you wouldn't need a Pesach at all. Anybody who just came to say, excuse me, Rabbi, can you please release me from my nether? So obviously he has a charata, so you should release him. No, you have to find a Pesach. Umatzinu v'gemar ashu machzir and limso Pesachel minun lanodrim. The people that the Chachamim used to, they use their Torah expertise to try to find ways out for the Nadarim. Why? Elavadai ha'emes kimo shekasav duvina charata demeikar. They were trying to help people get released from their Nadarim so that they shouldn't be subject to the penalty if they neglect to fulfill it. Yeah.
So again, this seems to emphasize that this is what we do for Rosh Hashanah, finding three random guys in a shul and going through the, you know.
Yeah, but they shouldn't be random. They should be at least somewhat knowledgeable about what being Matur Nether involved, at least one of them, yeah.
All right, but then in that case, they're supposed to, somebody then is supposed to determine what the grounds possibly might be.
It's charata. We're using pure charata there.
All right.
The pure charata is that when you say the formula of Hataras Adarim, you say explicitly, I have no interest, I wish I never vowed it, I have total charata. So that's the normal way and the easiest to understand way that you're matar and neder nowadays. So normally you don't get involved in these fancy psachim, but rather you use the pure charata, assuming it's true. The od shikol yisod heter nedarim who taina shigogo ones shator amra ha'adam bishvua prat lanos. They have to be fully present as a person when you take the shvua. But if there's something that you're missing at the time they took the shvua, so then that would serve as a basis to release one from the shvua. The whole point is that there was something you were missing at the time that you now know. Uchmo kein benyam piva libo shavin. They have this principle. It's okay. The whole point is that you need to have full intention. You need to, it has to be, your heart has to fully be into the nether. But if you discovered more information later that undermines this attitude, then it's a chisaron, it's a lack of pi v'libo shavin to verbally and internally be totally expressive and accepting of the nether. V'imkein mishum charata de me'achshav v'yevshar lislo shkago ones be'isa shvuah klal. If it's just that you regret now, but you really enjoyed that being a subject to this nether, or liked being subject to this nether for the last little while, so it's impossible to say that at the time you took the nether you were missing some information, because you wanted at the time and for a significant period of time afterwards you wanted to be subject to it. I'm sorry, I skipped a line. But now you completely agree that you would, there be no chance that you would have made the nether if you would now know the information that you have now. Some of the great authorities, the Ramban in this case, in the name of Rav Haigon, says, she goes, absolutely the paskin and halacha ke Rava, even though technically the halacha follows Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, the poskin bacharot of an iskokin loke Yisrael, and you release the vow of someone who vowed with the name of God. We are more stringent now because people were apparently getting too cozy with their nedarim and shavuos, and they were making them too frequently. So therefore, in order to teach people a lesson, we will not nullify your vow if you use God's name when you made the vow, even if you regret it. Mm. Unless it's a similar case, and if it's an exact case, so then the neder shvuah doesn't take effect at all. But if it's even just a little similar to the case that it's something that's either we're talking about person forcing your hand in a transaction, or if it's totally exaggerated, or if it's something where you're making maybe made somewhat of a mistake, or some new situation that developed that you would have had no idea. So then, if it's something like that, so then even if it were technically that situation, it would need Hataras Nedarim, but it will at least give you Hataras Nedarim even if you made the vow with the name of God. And furthermore, we're only matter nedarim, we're not matter shavuos at all. That was this minhag in those days. Again, I don't necessarily think that we hear this now, but the minhag that was in those times is that if there is a shavua, we don't matter it at all unless it's something that was for a mitzvah. So, for example, the shua is causing strife between husband and wife. So then, or anyone, any individuals. Mm. So then, then that's a situation we do the hatara, but otherwise we would not do the hatara. The sages tell us that even three not particularly learned individuals can make Hataras Nedarim. Even if they're not really learned, but if they're smart enough that if you explain it to them and they get it, then they can do Hataras Nedarim. Makom, and one of them at least has to be somewhat familiar with the laws. So even one individual can be matir another if he is a real expert. Interesting. So Sefer Chinuch is first suggesting over here that in order to be considered a mumcha for the purpose of Nedarim, it's not any individual who happens to be a real expert in the laws of Nedarim, but rather it's specifically someone who has smicha, the real smicha from Eretz Yisrael, which obviously does not exist nowadays anymore, or it has to be someone who was tested by someone with real smicha, and at least like a mini smicha regarding Nedarim Ushvus was conferred upon this individual. So in other words, the Sefer Chinuch's original shita is that a yochid mumcha has to be connected to the original smicha.
So wait a second.
That's
so
not going to happen.
We don't have that, obviously. We don't have like a, you know, extra layer of smicha you get, you know. Like,
right.
Oh, okay.
So according to this approach, there is no yochid mumcha nowadays, and Hataras Nedarim would always have to be in front of three. I think the Rambam says that anyone, even nowadays, doesn't have to do a smicha at all. It's just anyone who's an expert in Nedarim and Shavuos can release a vow even individually, but most people disagree. V'din ha'chozer toch kidei dibor min Nedarim u'shvua shechazaras u'chazara. If you retract your neder shvuah within the time span of toch kidei dibor, which is the amount of time it takes to say shalom alecha Rebbe. Shalom alecha Rebbe. How much is that? 3 seconds, something like that, maybe less.
So I swear maybe to you, so no, I take it back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Ah.
Yeah, it has to be within a couple of seconds, which is a general rule in the Torah. Except for certain situations where no retraction is possible.
Hareyat.
Hareyat, yes.
Hareyat,
so, for marriage and divorce, we don't allow any retractions, even within Tokidei Dibor, because it's assumed that nobody does, nobody gets married or divorced unless they fully thought it out in advance and retraction.
You can't have
what university
if I had known what a jerk this guy was going to turn out to be, I never would have married him.
That's called Mekachtos.
Yeah, right.
That's a different mechanism.
Oh, I know somebody like that. Oh, my God.
That's Mekachtos. So that's... necessarily. It's, that's not that you get married, you say, Hare Mikudesh Asli. Oh, I'm sorry, thank you back. That's saying...
Yeah. 20 years later.
That's, that would not work. The whole point is, there was a marriage that was conducted under false pretenses. So when exactly does that apply? There's a whole discussion as to, that's, you know, a Jewish annulment. That means no divorce, but rather you declare that the marriage was never valid, which is generally if there was, classically it's talking about if there is a major flaw in the wife, so that the husband, but the poskim assume that you could apply it as well, that the woman wouldn't have married the husband if he had certain extremely major flaws, and therefore, in certain situations, you could annul a marriage. There's some hold, by the way, this whole idea of annulling a marriage only applies before nisuin. You can only nullify erusin, meaning because that's like a sort of quasi-financial transaction. You give. I mean, you could get three ways of doing it, of course, but the standard way is doing a. Is giving an object of value like a ring. So if you give an object of value and then you know, nothing's really happened yet, so therefore it's just a transaction like, so therefore you could retract it. But once the couple actually moves in together, then that nullifies any... okay. There are certain very, very extreme situations where it could be paskin that a get would not be needed because there would be like an annulment. However, it's extremely, extremely rare and under very, very extreme situations. And one of the whole controversy nowadays regarding women being released without a get, and the more controversial aspects of that are generally having to do with that they are more. There's certain people who are more willing to apply the idea of mekachtos in a manner that's not classically accepted by the normative psak.
Well, if I had realized, you know, the guy never told me he was okay as long as he was on his meds, his medications.
It has to be the problem.
That's pretty, you know.
It's not so pushy. The problem is it has to be something that basically no woman in her right mind would ever accept. So the problem is that if a man is okay while he's on his meds and a woman is, you know, getting up there in years, let's say she's 45 and she met a guy who's particularly... what?
That's not so old.
He's pretty old.
I know. I take it back.
It's not an old woman, but
it's
pretty old for never being married, especially in the Orthodox Jewish community. Quite old. So the if she meets a guy who's perfectly nice while he's on his meds, she'll remind him always to take his meds.
She never told nobody. Never told her.
But that, also that can even be, so can be remedied. It's not something which is which is impossible to change. You know, if someone
but then he refuses.
You know,
to take his
right. I mean, you know, if, right. if someone you know.
The standard is pretty high, and the normative. It's very, very high. Situations where you just be like, oh, the guy's a jerk, so she never would have married him, so no get. Let her be released is not really...
The thing is, if you don't...
Anyway, but again, it's applied much less seldom than if you or I would just say, oh, she never married him, but, you know, for that reason, it's usually held to a much higher standard than that. V'din. Oh, so this is a chatochi dibor business is also relevant regarding davening. So if you make a mistake in davening and then you immediately correct yourself, it has to be within tochi dibor. Like coming up, aseres you made tshuva when you say instead of akel hakadosh in shmoneh esrei, you're supposed to say amelech hakadosh. So if you say Akel HaKadosh, Amelech HaKadosh, you correct yourself right away within a couple seconds, so that would be okay. But if it's past the time of Tokei Dibur, then you got to start again from the beginning. And you haven't started the next bracha yet.
What if you have started?
Then even Tokei Dibur doesn't count. It doesn't help. Umash Amru Sheha'av Mefer Kol Neder V'Abal Nidre Inui V'Dvarim Shebeino Levena. So there's a different mechanism regarding fathers and husbands, which I think we're going to have to get to next time because I have to get to an event in Westchester. And this is a new concept. So when's the next year?